Rasa Panchadhyaya, Raslila, the great treasure from the entire unlimited mine of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're discussing this verse, we're finishing this verse, 29.5. Tuhantyobi yayu kashchid doham hitwa samutsukaha payo dishritya samvayam ano dvasya parayayu. In these verses, 29.5 through 29.8, Vyasadeva and Shukamuni are describing the scene back at the gopis' houses before they ran away to join Krishna in the rasa dance on the bank of the Yamuna. What were they doing? How were they engaged? And why did they leave? So this particular verse, 29.5, we mentioned yesterday, it represents the abandonment or the giving up of one's social duties, varna dharma, ashram dharma, ashram karma, and varna karma, varna dharma. We meet married people, we say, we ask them, what are you doing? They say, we're doing our karma. I'm a married man, I'm doing my work, working for my wife, earning income, taking care of the home, my karma. My dharma. So there's varna karma. What is the varna? The gopis we mentioned yesterday. They're milkmaids, coward girls. Their profession and their dharma, their varna dharma is the same. Their whole lives, their profession is cows. Caring for cows, milking cows. Cows and milk production, ghee production, butter and ghee, for cooking, for cleansing, for medicine, and for Krishna to steal makanchur. That's the main thing. And the Brajagopis. So this was their profession. You see the girls in the village, the coward girls, the vaishyas, the abiras, that class that specially takes care of the animals, Pashupal, in this case, the Gopals, they protect the cows. From the earliest childhood, they're collecting the gober and carrying it on a pan in their head to their mothers. Their mothers show them how to mold it and shape it into patties for cooking. And then the girls will start milking the cows from the earliest of ages. So now, of course, they're married, or some are unmarried, and they're continuing the same profession. This is their varna dharma, the profession. Like someone says, oh, my varna is a Brahmin. So what is your profession? Oh, I'm a teacher. I do yajna. I do puja. I do jyotishi. I'm a vaidya doctor, Ayurveda. These are the usual professions of a Vedic Brahmin. Of course, now Brahmins do everything because Brahmins have good intelligence and good qualities. So they apply their intelligence and good qualities to any type of profession, whether it's computers or business management or CEO or whatever. But the gopis are coward girls from birth, and they're living and acting and working as coward girls. Now some are married, newly married, and some aren't. But in this verse we were discussing, it's all about milk. It's about milk. They stopped milking cows, which is one of their primary professions. It all starts with milking the cow. Having a cow to milk, first of all. But then milking the cow, and then from getting that milk, everything comes. From milk to burfi, and everything in between. Milk to kheer. So without the milk, there's not much. But if you have milk, then you have hundreds and hundreds of preparations, as Indian people know so well. Sweets and sabjis and So many things. So they gave up milking the cows. Then, of course, milking the cow, then boiling the milk. So they gave up boiling the milk. Two major stages in milk production and their profession. Milking the cows and boiling the milk. But then, because many of them are not married or married, but they're old enough to cook. You see in the villages in India, even the youngest girls, they're cooking. That's the first thing they learn practically is to cook, to roll chapati, to make some rice, make some dal. By the time they're 7 or 8 years old, they can cook an entire meal. Because they have large joint families, so everyone, the daughters are two more hands to help the mother. And as soon as they can, they're enlisted in the cooking seva. In modern cities, no one learns these things. Have maids to cook, or the mother cooks, or whatever. And the daughters go to college. But they gave up cooking and milk production, which are two vital, if they're married, certainly they're vital activities of a married woman, cooking, and in this case, their professions. So then what's the keynote here? Doham hitwa samutsuka. In the second line, it says, Doham hitwa samutsuka. Doham hitwa samutsuka. That they could do hitwa because they had utsa. Utsuka. So hitwa means to reject, to drop, to abandon, to forget. Hitwa. So they could give up their profession, doham, milk, doha means milk. They could give it up because of utsuka. Because they were some utsuka. Utsuka means very eager. Eager, impatient, practically mad with eagerness and enthusiasm. For what? One side is doham hitwa. They gave up milk, and the other side is samsuka. But there's no, it just says they gave up milking the cows and they were, became, because of eagerness, intense eagerness. Samyak, samyak, utsuka means complete eagerness. Their minds were eager. Their hearts were eager. Their bodies were eager. Their senses were eager. Their eyes were eager to see something or someone. And their ears were eager to hear something or to hear someone. And their hands were eager to touch something or touch someone. And smell something or smell someone. Who is that or what is that cause of that great eagerness? Krishna. Brajastriya Krishna. We read in the other verse. Brajastriya Krishna Grihita Manasa. That Krishna, he created eagerness in the gopis' minds and hearts and senses and bodies. Eagerness to run to Krishna, eagerness to serve Krishna, eagerness to be with Krishna and associate with Krishna. And there's so much eagerness on this side, then they lost their eagerness on another side. Because if you become eager to play cricket, then you lose your eagerness to study your books. So after school, rather than studying, you become very eager to go to the cricket field or to the wherever, sports field, somewhere to eagerly play cricket and enthusiastically play cricket with your friends. Or if you're eager to dance, young girls like to dance or sing. So when they come home from school, they will follow their eagerness. Your eagerness will direct your movements. Of course, duty is also there. We have duty to work and go to school, and we're not so eager about it, going to work or going to school, but somehow that duty is so great that it overrides our eagerness. But in the gopis' case, their duty was toham hitwa and cooking. The cakes, it says that the samvayam were on the adishritya and anudvasya. Their cakes were on the chula. They were cooking cakes on the oven, or in the oven, as we say, and they forget about cooking. So if you're a daughter helping your mother cook and you forget about it and burn the cakes or burn the chapatis, your mother will be a little unhappy. And if you are a wife and you're cooking and you run away and leave everything cooking and burning and smoking the whole kitchen up, then obviously your husband won't be too happy. But that eagerness was so great in the gopis' case that it overruled their duty. Our duties usually overrule our eagerness. Like on Monday morning, we may be eager to stay in bed, which we crawled in on Sunday night after playing and enjoying all day Sunday with our family and even staying up late because it's Sunday. But then Monday comes and 7 o'clock in the morning or whenever people get up these days. Oh, I'm not very eager to get up. I don't have some utsuka to get up and bathe and go to work. But duty calls us and pushes us. But here, as I'm saying, the gopis gave up their duty. Their duty being their varna dharma in this case. Their actions and responsibilities that they had received by being born as coward girls, or being now duly married, or say newly married. So they gave up all their duties as a married person, which cooking is a big part of being a married person. And acharyas say it's because of this, samutsuka, that they became so eager to be with Krishna that they exhibited dramatic behavior. Dramatic. Extremely dramatic. When a young girl, only 15 years old, newly married, 1 year married in old days, married at 13 or 12, married for 1 year or so, runs out of the house in the middle of the night and abandons everything, it's certainly significant and dramatic and amazing behavior. Because of eagerness to go to not a illicit lover per se or some materialistic person, but eagerness to go to God. And we often see, although nowadays most people are very attentive to their material lives, they're very attentive to their studies and their work and their families, and rather neglectful, disinterested and neglectful, and certainly not very eager about spiritual practices or spiritual pursuits, bhakti yoga, serving Krishna. And because the world is going so fast and the demands of family and work are so great, we don't have any spare time to even think about God or even associate or serve God by reading Gita or reading Ramayana or visiting the temple or singing bhajans, Krishna bhajans, or worshiping. No time, as people say. No time, no time. And certainly not much eagerness. How eager people are to make money. You see, nowadays, even all the young ladies of the world, they become very eager to make money. Even if they're not even married, and they're single, and their mothers and fathers are providing for them their education and their clothing and food, but they're eager to get a job of their own and make money so they can have more money to eagerly spend on themselves. More clothes and more makeup and more entertainment and more independence and travel. So everyone, from the youngest lady in the world to the oldest man, youngest lady in the world to the oldest man, is very eager, samutsuka, to make money. Because money means enjoyment, pleasure. That's the general equation. Money equals happiness. Money equals pleasure. And more money means more pleasure and more happiness. But oftentimes we see it doesn't pan out that way. And this equation or this formula for happiness is often quite a failure. The people who have the most money have the least happiness. And the people who have the most money have the least pleasure. Rather, they have the most anxiety and the most fear and the most tension. Fear of thieves and tension and anxiety. When will I get a call on a telephone? Hello, Mr. So-and-so. You're making a lot of money now, so you should pay us a little percentage of your money. And if you don't pay us some money, then we won't protect you. It's called protection services. And rich people know well what this is. So if you pay us handsomely, then we will protect you from us. And if you don't pay us a good percentage of your income, then no one can protect you from us. And who us is, you don't want to find out. They're the operators of the underworld, let's say. And that world is very much existing. So this is dramatic behavior. And often, as we see in modern society, if someone hears the flute song of God in a metaphorical way, it's not that we hear God playing the flute, because maybe our God doesn't play the flute. Maybe our God, our Isht, is Ramchandra, and he shoots the bow, twang. We hear the bow of Ramchandra, twang. Or we hear the club of Vishnu, tong. Vishnu may be our Ishtadev from birth, or Ram. But we're neglectful of them because of our studies and school and our careers and families. No time. But sometime and some part of our life, we may hear that call of our Ishtadev, our Bhagavan. Our God in the heart will say, hey, what are you doing? So many years wasted, so much time wasted, going here and there, collecting this and that, buying this and that. What has it given you? What is the result? Have you found that essence of joy and peace and pleasure you're looking for? And then the person starts thinking. The inner voice speaks. The inner voice awakens him to higher thoughts and deeper contemplation. Maybe this life isn't working quite right. It's called middle essence. Middle essence. You're married at 24, then at the age of 36, after one yuga in human society, 12 years is considered a yuga for the human being. The age of 36, often progressive people, progressively pious people, they have a re-examination of their direction in life, reassessment of their values and what they hold to be dear and important to work for. And oftentimes by 36, they've attained some accomplishment. So after 12 years of marriage, the general scheme, now people get married older, but say 24 to 36, 12 years of marriage, then people think, oh, is this everything? We have our two kids. We finally have our nice house on payments. We have our big house on big payments. And we have that nice car my husband always wanted on big payments. And we go on lots of tours and travel around the world on big payments. And but is there something more? And that inner voice says, there's something more. Actually, you're not happy. What's missing is me, God, Vishnu, Ram, or Krishna. And if it doesn't come at 36, then maybe it comes at 48. Drag on for another 12 years. 24 years of happy marriage. 24 to 48. And then if it doesn't, if this inner voice doesn't come then, it rarely comes. Then you're a goner. Then you're lost to the outer voice of your mind. I want this. I want to enjoy. I met a gentleman who was 87 years old. He said, I believe in God, but I'm busy with my life. I believe in God, but I still want to enjoy. I want money. I know God is there for me, but I'm busy now. I said, now you're busy at 87. Should I come back when you're 107 and ask you if you're interested in bhakti bhajan? Samutsuka. But what we see when one hears that voice, whether he's 12 years old or he's 18 or he's 21 or 24, 48, or God forbid, 48 and 12, if he's 60, if he hears the voice, then we may see dramatic change in his behavior because of some utsuka. Some utsuka doesn't mean some utsuka. It means some utsuka. Means a complete takeover of eagerness. That man or woman who was not eager or interested or intensely desirous of God realization or spiritual pursuits or practices was quite the opposite idea in their mind at the age of 18 and 24 and even 36. Now they become very, very eager and enthusiastic and impatient to serve, realize God, associate with sadhus, visit holy places, read spiritual books. But this is the gopis' example. They were only 15, 16, and there was some utsuka to run to Krishna. Toham hitwa samutsuka. Doham, soham, everything. Hitwa. I am that, that is, I am that, soham. That family, this, that engagement, that profession, soham. Aham, I, and that. Soham and doham. Doham means milking the cows. Doham. Very nice lesson. Acharyas are saying we need to pray for that eagerness. That eagerness, because eagerness is the cause of enthusiastic behavior. Enthusiasm is something that's generally expressed through the movements of the body and senses. You see someone at the work and the employer says, oh, he's very enthusiastic about his work. Yes? He's sitting there, he's not spacing out or getting distracted on the internet and the girls around him because he's married and he's peacefully married. And he's really attentive and focused and fixed on his job. And he's enthusiastic. But that enthusiasm comes from some mental position of his eagerness. So the gopis were very eager already. So much burning eagerness is called purva rag. Love has its own eagerness. Love, loving attachment, loving interest, and the intensity of love creates eagerness within the mind and heart of any lover. The gopis' eagerness to love Krishna, their eagerness to serve Krishna was growing in them since they were born. They're innately Krishna's lovers from very birth. So even when they played with Krishna in the sandbox in Gokul, or they would play in the Yamuna with him, as little children, 2 years old, 3 years old, and Gokul, they love Krishna. Radhika, Lalita, Vishaka, they were in love. But they didn't know it to be love, like man-woman love. But as they grew up, then it started growing up in them. That love, purva rag, that prior love, that intense loving attachment, and eagerness to be with that desired beloved. That eagerness to associate and serve that desired beloved, whom one has not yet met or not yet associated or loved, was growing, purva rag. And now the eagerness was already there. When Krishna jago kalam, manoharam, when Krishna played jago kalam, he played his flute, then the eagerness was already resting in their minds. Their eagerness for Krishna was already deeply controlling their hearts. But as soon as Krishna played the flute, then he stole their minds. Manoharam, because the eagerness is already there. Someone's eager to get robbed. Someone's eager to get robbed, then they'll leave all their doors open at night and leave all their gold out on the out on the floor and leave all their bangles lined up and all their cash. So then someone goes by, oh, that house is open. They must be eager to get robbed. And then they go inside and say, oh, look, everything's lined up. Here's all the bangles. Oh, she's not even wearing any to bed. And no jewelry on. Oh, she gave everything. So the gopis' hearts were so eager already. Samutsuka. Riddhi samutsuka. Then when Krishna played his flute, then it was total conquest to their heart. Ananga vardhanam. Eagerness for love was already there. And then the other verse we read, ananga vardhanam. That eagerness then expanded in leaps and bounds to become intense, ever-increasing desires for intimate love and service of Krishna as his amorous romantic lovers, is the heroines, nayakas of Vrindavan. So that now that eagerness, which is settled in their hearts as a feeling, that eagerness that was residing in their minds as a sensation and a desire, had now become utsaha. Samutsuka became utsaha. Utsaha means enthusiasm. So now one will see the depth of their eagerness by the intensity of their enthusiasm. One can see the depth of one's eagerness to make money and his eagerness to please the boss by how enthusiastic he is in the workplace. So one can measure the intense depth of the gopis' eagerness to love God and serve God and run to God if they ever in their life get the opportunity. Like some woman who's married, she may be very eager to run to God, to run to God, and to serve God and throw her life at the feet of God and give her whole life for the service of God. But she's restricted. She's constrained by her marriage and her family. But now she's 65 years old. Her husband has died 2 years ago. Her eldest son is married. And all her children are married and doing nicely. So then she thinks, now is my chance. Now I can run to God. I have no responsibilities. That eagerness I've had all my life, I can now enthusiastically express it by running to Vrindavan, looking for Guru. And many elderly women and widows come here, or men, when their family responsibilities are completed. Maybe, unfortunately, the wife dies first or whatever. Or they don't get married, that's even better. And they run to Vrindavan to find Guru and find Krishna. So in these verses, verse 29, 5 through 8, we see the example, the expression, outward expression of their eagerness and love, their prem utkantita, their prem samutsuka, their intense samutsuka, their complete eagerness. Samutsuka means eagerness. Oh, my mind is eager to work, but my body is not so eager. In my mind, I'm very eager. Yes, I should work, but I'm sitting home. Well, it doesn't seem you're that eager. Yes, I should get a job. I should make money. You agree with your mother when you're sitting home. Well, then go out and look for a job. Show how eager you are to make money. Tomorrow. Maybe there's a big cricket match on television. I'll watch today. Tomorrow I'll go. Then tomorrow, oh, mother, there's a big movie in the cinema hall. I have to go see that movie. It's only here for 2 days. So their eagerness was some utsuka. It was in their mind. It was in their heart. Was in their senses, just waiting to explode in physical expressions. And that is utsaha. Enthusiasm in behavior, enthusiasm in movements, enthusiasm in activities. So now these verses, oh, let's see how much eagerness they had. Just see how eager. They gave up all the duties and responsibilities and karmas of their varna as abiras, as milkmaids, cowherd girls, gave up milking cows, gave up boiling milk, gave up helping their mothers cook, gave up cooking for their husbands. That's what's being told here. So beautiful, the commentaries on one word. Samutsuka. And of course, as I mentioned, I alluded to the connection of this word samutsuka, and we conditioned souls who are, as the Jesus, or it says in Christian Bible, the soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. Which means that my Atma and myself, I really want to be a good person. I really want to be a good Hindu or Christian, etc. I really want to serve God, and I want to be eager about it. But I'm not. I'm not. Because I'm too eager about enjoying my body, sense gratification, people, places, travel, clothes, food, prestige. But my soul is willing. I really want to serve God, but I'm not. Because my flesh, my body, my indriya are so much pushing me and so much demanding attention and gratification and stimulation moment to moment, hour to hour. I really don't have any time for God. I'm busy going to the mall to shop. I'm busy going on my holiday to Europe and Asia or Singapore, Australia, America. So the gopis, they were teaching this nice example that when we become eager for God, how many other good qualities come? Determination, detachment. Eagerness for God brings enthusiasm. It brings determination. It brings detachment. This is being said here. 14-year-old girls are running into the forest full of tigers and cobras at 12 o'clock at night. That's pretty intense determination. And fearlessness. Eagerness to run to God, eagerness to associate and serve God, creates so many dynamic qualities which make any man or woman successful. Fearlessness, determination, detachment, enthusiasm. If we apply these qualities to business or commerce or the making of money, then one will generally be very successful. He's very enthusiastic about working and making money and very determined and detached from wasting time in sense gratification, sports and playing, always studying his profession, always working on his job and perfecting it. He'll be a winner, I guess, if that means, that means a winner. He'll be successful. It said, there's one Bengali phrase, it says, Lakshmi Devi lives with the enthusiastic person. My Gurudev would quote that. Lakshmi Devi, she lives, she resides where enthusiasm is strong. So if we're very enthusiastic to make money, and of course it's our destiny, it's our karma, then we make money. Or even if we may not make the money we desire, but we will make money. Maybe I'm a rickshaw wala, and I desire millions of dollars, but it's not my destiny or my karma or my ability, intellectual ability. But because I'm enthusiastic about my profession, I will make a lot of money as a rickshaw wala. I'll enthusiastically carry my passengers and my goods from morning to night. And as far as rickshaw wallas go, I'm pretty well off. I'm making 8,000 rupees a month. But it's not exactly the millions of dollars that you're desiring. So that also is proven there. Someone might say, oh, the rickshaw wala is so enthusiastically working. So this seems to disprove your maxim or your theory that Lakshmi Devi resides with the enthusiastic person. No, it doesn't. It rather proves. Because look at this other rickshaw wala. He's not that enthusiastic. He's also riding a rickshaw. He only makes 3,000 rupees a month. You see. And you've seen that practically living in Vrindavan. We're always riding bicycle rickshaws. And those that are very enthusiastic, I saw one individual, one young man, he was very enthusiastic about his rickshaw business. And he was working day and night. And I asked him, I said, why are you just running day and night? He said, I want to buy an auto rickshaw. So it wasn't his destiny just to get one at marriage. Some people are married and in their particular caste, the father or someone gives him an auto rickshaw to make money, etc. But he worked very enthusiastically. Then he was rewarded, saved his money, and then he bought an auto rickshaw. Now he was making more money and also running very enthusiastically. So this enthusiasm of the gopis is admirable. And especially it was directed towards God and not money, directed towards perfection and not sense gratification, directed towards liberation and not bondage and rebirth and samsara. So obviously, good qualities have their best application and a secondary application. Let's say the best application of good qualities is towards some action or activity which will give us the greatest result. So to be have determination and enthusiasm and detachment and eagerness to realize God, then guess what? One will realize God, whether he's a pauper or whether he's middle class or whether he's a wealthy person. Because Krishna is Dina Bandhu and Krishna is Dina Vatsalya. He's Bhakta Vatsal. He's a friend of the poor and Dina Bandhu, and he's Bhakta Vatsali. He's affectionate. He's not hard to attain. Lakshmi is hard to attain. It depends on your destiny and your good fortune. But Krishna, attaining Krishna, attaining love of God, attaining liberation, eternal life of joy and happiness in the spiritual world, does not depend on destiny. It depends on surrender to God. It depends on the pleasure of God, and depends on seva, which is anyone can do. There's no limitation by age. There's no limitation by intellectual capacity. There's no limitation by financial standing in the world. A poor man, a rich man, a foolish man, a vidvan, an intelligent man or woman, anyone can serve God in a determined way with determination and eagerness and enthusiasm. And of course, automatically that service will create detachment and they'll get success. But a poor man attaining success in the material world, if we measure success as attaining money, rarely seen. Poor man is always poor man. Rich man is always rich man. Sometimes becomes poor. Middle class is always middle class. Moves a little more middle class, a little less middle class. But there's no classes in devotion. There's no classes in Krishna's bhaktas. There's only one class. There's one gotra. When one approaches God and one surrenders to the service of God and his parivar, his family, there's only one gotra. But in the material society, you are honored, respected or disrespected because of your gotra or your varna or your ashram. What is your varna? I'm Shudra. Oh, you're Shudra. I'm Brahmin. I'm Thakur. I'm Kshatriya. Oh, acha. Namaste. Some respect is there. Or what is your income? How much are you worth? He's the 10th richest man in the world. Well, the 10th richest man in the world will certainly be respected most everywhere, and honored and even worshipped by the majority of people. But a poor rickshawwala will not be featured in the Bollywood Times, and a poor rickshawwala will not be interviewed on the television and by the radio. But anyone who approaches God, there's only one gotra, only one parivar, achutta parivar. When you go to a holy place like Haridwar or Pushkar or Rishikesh or Vrindavan, Mathura, Banaras, Allahabad, the pandits and priests will ask you, Konsa gotra? Gotra, what is your gotra? Oh, I'm this and that. But when you become Vaishnav, they say, what is your gotra? We say, Achyuta gotra. Achyuta gotra. God's family, the family of God. God is the one father of everyone. Naturally. He's the creator of everything. So he's the father, creator, sustainer of everything. Maintainer. The father maintains a family of five and creates a family of five. So God creates a family of 50 billion, zillion animals, birds, fish, humans. And he creates them and he maintains them. He's the supreme father. You come in a Achyuta Gotra. And that's your Gotra. Well, what is your Varna? Krishna Das, Das, and Odas. Acha. You're a servant class. Yes, I'm servant class. I'm servant class. Are you engaged in government service? No. I'm engaged in Jaru Seva. I do Jaru Seva. I sweep the mandir every day. I sweep the mandir with a special Jaru only for the mandir. And I have a Narayal Jaru for outside in the mandir courtyard. And then I sweep the steps coming up the mountain to the mandir. I sweep about 8 hours a day in Barsana. I am a Jaru Sevite. Acha, very nice. And then you meet someone else. Oh, hello, sir. What is your gotra? My gotra is Achyuta gotra. Acha. And what is your varna? My varna is Das. Das Anodas. Acha. What is your... I'm servant class. What is your service? Oh, my service, I do Thakurji Sringhar. I do Thakurji Sringhar. Every morning I go in and I dress the deity in poshak, clothing and shringar and outfits and jewelry and make him look so beautiful for darshan. Acha. One by one, all the members of the Achyuta Gotra, God's family, Ram, Krishna, Vishnu's family, they're all servants. When you go to a large mandir like Sri Rangam, or Venkateshwara Balaji, or Jagannathji, or any large mandir, even in Vrindavan, all the devotees, the men and ladies, mostly men or ladies, both, that work there, work for the deities, they're all called Sevites. Sevites. Sevite means servants, servant class. And if you go to, say, Jagannath Puri, and you ask someone, what is your service in your service class to Achyuta Gotra Krishna Jagannath? Oh, I do Chandan Seva. I grind Jagannath's Chandan every day. That's my service. Oh, what is your service? Oh, I collect the firewood. I collect the wood, the lakri, for cooking all the bhoga. Oh, what is your service? Oh, I make the clay pots. I make all the coolers and clay pots for the cooking of the Thakurji's bhog. So many services. And everyone's blissful. So it's easy to serve God with determination, enthusiasm, and attain perfection just by sweeping the temple or cooking for the Lord. And the gopis are showing eagerness for this. And then they're also showing when you're eager for God, you become detached from the material world. When you're eager for God, you lose your eagerness for material life, material pursuits. What was so interesting before, I even have met children in America, one family. They were Gujaratis. A husband and wife moved to America, Washington, D.C. in the 1980s. And they were both surgeons in a major hospital. Wife was making $500,000 a year. Husband was making $750,000 a year in 1980, 30 years ago. And their son, they had two sons, quite modern family, big house and mobile home and two or three cars and swimming pool behind their house. And a big yacht, big boat, and so many vacations. big facility to enjoy. And then at some point they got the calling. They got interested in God. We met them. We're visiting them. And then their children came to the temple one summer. There was a camp, a spiritual camp organized for the children of Indian people in America. One Radha Krishna temple in Washington. So many of the families, they sent their young daughters and sons there for 5 weeks for some camp. And they did hiking and so many things, that sports. And then they were learning about bhajans, how to sing bhajans and offer artik and make offerings of their food, many, many things. So then afterwards, the children went home. So these two sons, they went back to their parents, the two doctors. And then the father said, Swamiji, you won't believe what happened. My children, they spent half the summer they spent at the temple, associating with devotees, attending Mangal Arati, taking prasad all day and all these things. And enjoying their vacation, learning about how to do artik and how to respect Shastra and how to read Bhagavad Gita and all these things. And make some offering for Thakurji, put tosi leaves on the offering. And now when I ask them, on Saturday when they have their day off from school, I say, do you want to go to the soccer match? I used to love to see collegiate soccer. We used to go together to the soccer match and to the soccer field to watch this college play soccer. And the children said, no, or if it was on Saturday or even Sunday, no, we don't want to go. We're not eager anymore. We don't want to go see the soccer match or see the, because in America they don't play cricket. So there's no cricket to be eager about. But there's baseball and football and soccer and all these other sports, basketball. So they lost their eagerness automatically because they had became eager about Krishna, became eager about God by that association. And their father was rather amazed. And then he would suggest to them, because on the weekends they would also go out to restaurants. And they, unfortunately, they were kind of Americanized by being there for many years, so they were non-veg. So then the children, they'd say, well, let's go to our favorite restaurant. Then the children would say, I don't want to go there. I want to go to the temple. Let's take some Mahaprasadam. And then the father and mother would say, what has happened to you? What is this? Why are you so eager for Mahaprasad? You used to love to go to this restaurant and eat all these things. So this is the example that gopis are also showing, that when eagerness is there for God, then we lose our eagerness for other things. And what does that eagerness produce? What does that eagerness and enthusiasm to serve God and be with God? Certainly it produces dramatic behavior. A man is working in America and he has average business length hair. He's wearing suit and tie, and he's going to work. He has his degree, and he's living at home or maybe in his own apartment. Then someone gives him a Bhagavad Gita. He starts reading Bhagavad Gita, an American man. And then he meets that person, and he says, why don't you come and visit the Hare Krishna temple, the Radha Krishna temple? It's very nice. Nice music, nice prasad. So by chance, he ventures there and visits. And then they have a bookstore there and a gift shop, and they sell other spiritual books, Bhagavatam and other books, and incense and these things. Well, he goes there with his friend from the temple, and he buys some incense. And then he buys a poster of Radha and Krishna, some poster, picture. And his friend says, why don't you put this poster in your house? And then your food, you can offer, you can make a plate and put your food offered to this picture. So he does this. And after some time, 1 year or so, that American gentleman who's educated, degree holder, working in his profession, he moves into the local temple. He puts on a dhoti and a kurta. He shaves his head, becomes mundan, bald, puts on Vaishnav tilak, and starts serving God 24/7. That's dramatic change in behavior. And the gopis, he gave up his varna dharma, he gave up his ashram dharma, and ran to Krishna with great enthusiasm and great eagerness and determination and detachment from his previous life. So this is samutsuka. Gopis are so enthusiastic. Forgot about cooking, forgot about milking the cows. Now we can start the next verse to hear more descriptions of what they were doing before Krishna called them, and what is the extent of their detachment, and what various activities did they leave and run away from, and what does it mean? But before that, we discussed that. I wanted to describe one lila in this verse number 5. Tuhantyo biyayu kashchid toham hitwa samutsuka payo jishritya samyavam anujvasya parayayu. Gopis were milking cows. They dropped it in the middle when they heard Krishna's flute. And they ran to meet him. They were boiling that milk. Others had collected the milk and finished milking the cows. And they were boiling the milk on the stove. Let it go. It was boiling on the stove. We may not know in the modern world, but in the Vedic society, in the Indian society, milk, dude, is amrit and it's sacred. Cow's milk is a gift of God, as is everything. But especially milk. It's considered so sacred and so divine that you can make an offense to milk. You can make an aparad, an offense to milk. In the ancient culture of India, if someone spilled or dropped one drop of milk on the floor, their mother and father would say, Hey, Lala, hey, Chora. What are you doing? You dropped milk on the floor. Pick that up with your hand. Go like this and eat that. You dropped it on the table. Why are you so neglectful? Why are you so inattentive? This milk is from our mother. This is our mother's gift. Mother cow has given us this milk for our sustenance, for our intelligence, for our maintenance and happiness. Don't be so careless with milk. That's spilling a drop of milk. And then, nowadays we throw milk away. We drop everywhere. We don't care. Because we're so far from the original culture. So far from the personal conception of reality. Now, when milk is being boiled on the stove to prepare so many other preparations, if that milk by chance boils over the pot and lands on the stove, that lady, girl, or mother, or wife who's boiling that milk, she feels so repentive, so sorrowful. Oh, how could I be so inattentive? Look what I've done. And quickly she would clean it up before her husband would see it, or before her father would see it, before her mother. Or what to speak of a mother-in-law. Because you wouldn't want to be caught making an offense or an aparad to the milk. This was the depth of the hearts of the people of the Indian culture, the Vedic society of India. Our Guru Maharaj, he came from India to America. He taught us this principle about the sacredness of milk. And in America, we have thousands of cows and so many, so much cow milk. But he taught us that this is sacred. That this, he said, this cow's milk is a transformation of the very blood of the cow. The cow eats grass, and the grass is turned into ultimately blood, and the blood is transformed into milk, and we draw the milk from the stan or udder of the cow. The Gomata is giving us her blood. She's giving us her very blood in the form of her milk to nourish us, to make us happy and satisfied, and grow nicely and healthily, healthy bones and healthy teeth, strong minds and bodies. My Gurudev, he taught Srila Prabhupada. In fact, once in Los Angeles, he was there. We were also there. And someone was serving milk to all the devotees in the ashram. He was a new man. He was rather careless and passionate. He was in a hurry. So he was taking, we had one balti with the milk, stainless steel serving container, very quickly going down the line of all the devotees, pouring their cup of milk. And it was dropped out of the, he would drop it on the floor along the way. And Gurudev heard. And he came, "What is this?" "This milk is the blood of the cow. You fool, you aparadi, be so neglectful. Who has done this?" "Oh, the servant, the server who's serving the milk. It's his turn and he has carelessly done this." So then Prabhupada said, "You go and you pick up all that milk with your hand and you drink that milk. And always remember this. How sacred and special is milk." But here, Samutsuka, the gopis became so eager to meet Krishna that they left milk boiling on a stove. And that's their duty. That's their job. What the wife is doing in the kitchen, the husband has no mind there. He's not paying attention. What the mother is doing in the kitchen, the children are not paying attention. That's her responsibility, her duty. So they ran away, which means that milk is boiling on the stove, on the oven, chula, and it will spill. So they'll make a fence. Zaparad. They didn't care. Not that this is a good example, of course, but this shows the extent. There's actually a very nice lila. Doham. Doham means milk. Doham hitwa, they gave up and stopped their milking business and everything related to milk production to run away to serve Krishna, to be with God and associate with God. In Barsana, there's a very beautiful Leelastali, which is near Chiksoli Gram, and very much within a few hundred meters of Gavarvan. And that kund is called Dohani Kund. There's a kund there, a lake. Dohani Kund. And this is the place where Brishabhanu Maharaj, Radharani's father, used to have his goshala. And there were thousands and thousands of cows there. And every day, Brishabhanu Maharaj, all the cows would come there and be milked by the coward men, by the gopas. So one day, Radharani came there to Dohani Kund, and she was looking. She's a princess. Her father, King Brishabhanu, is the king of that area, of this Brishabhanupur. It's called Brishabhanupur, Barsana. Barsani Wali Radhe, Shri Radhe, Radhe, Radhe. Barsani Wali Radha. So she was curious, looking and seeing how the gopas, the gwals, were milking the cow. And she was thinking, "Oh, I would like to try that. I would like to milk a cow," which is not the usual engagement of a princess. Radharani's a princess. She's a gopi, that she's a princess, gopi princess. And so many thousands of servants Vrishabhanu Maharaj had to take care of the cows. By chance, one mischievous boy showed up there. Now, mischievous boy's name was, of course, Krishna, Govinda, Gopal. And Radharani said, "Hey, Govinda, I'm very eager to milk this cow." And Krishna said, "I'll show you. I'll show you how to milk the cow. Listen." So then they got one bench. And Krishna said, like a bench like this, like a seat, kursi. Krishna said, "You sit in the front. You sit in the front, and I'll sit behind you. Front and back." Now there's two stan, the two udders of the cow, the two front ones. You go like this. I'll show you. You milk the cow. And the two back ones, I will milk. So together, there are four charstan of the cow. We will milk the cow and collect the milk in the bucket, milk balti. But while you're milking, you should keep looking at me. Krishna told Radharani, while you're milking the cow, you should go like this. I've taught you, now keep looking at me. Because I'm behind you. So Radharani's looking behind. And Krishna's looking at her. Yes, yes, very good, very good. So Krishna's looking at Radharani, telling her, "Yes, you're doing a very good job of milking the cow." And Radharani's very happy. "Oh, Krishna's pleased with me. I'm very successful in my first attempt to milk the cow." But Krishna's very chatur and chalak. He's very mischievous, playful, unpredictable, fun-loving, prankster. So while he was milking the cow and Radharani was looking at him, then Krishna took the udders of the cow and he shot a stream, a thick white stream of milk right into Radharani's face. All over Radharani's beautiful golden lotus face, splashed with milk from the cow that Krishna was milking. And Radharani's, and all the sakis were there. And Krishna, everyone started laughing. It was great fun. And Radharani also laughed. Because among friends, among lovers and friends, if someone makes a joke on you, you don't mind. Because it's done out of love and not envy. It's done out of appreciation and not, let's say, hatred. So then Radharani also laughed. But then Krishna was so kind. He took his chatur and he cleaned Radharani's face. He wiped the milk from her face. So this is a nice pastime. It took place in Barsana. Barsana Dham, Dohani Kund. You can go there. You can visit Dohani Kund. When you do Prikama, if you do Barsana Prikama, when you get the Chikshali Gram and you're going towards Mor Kutir and Man Kutir, we just take a small detour for 5-10 minutes to the left off of the Prikama Mark and you can come to Hani Kund. We first visited there in 1977 when we went on Yatra around a few places, Barsana, Nandagram, Govardhan, Vrindavan. So beautiful, very, very beautiful. And the water was very clean. Nowadays, I don't know, but it depends on our vision. Because ultimately, Vrindavan is transcendental, and it's all aprakrita, aprakrita, unmanifest in its true beauty and rasa-filled form. So when we become transcendental, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena, our eye becomes the eye of specialized devotion. Bhakti vilochan, vilochan, vishesh lochan, a very specialized eye, an eye that's dipped in devotion, an ak that's saturated with pure bhakti, prema bhakti, prema bhakti. Then one can see Vrindavan as it is. And what is aprakrita becomes prakrita. And what is invisible becomes visible. What is imperceivable becomes perceivable. What is intangible becomes tangible. You can see Krishna and Radha and Vrindavan. You can feel Krishna and Vrindavan. He will touch you. This is the experience of the Premi Bhaktas living in Vrindavan, even today. The Siddhasants of Vrindavan. So this is Dohani Kund. Now we'll begin the next verse, 29.6, which is further describing the situation of the gopis, how much they were samutsuka, how much they were really ati ati samutsuka, extremely, excessively, highly accelerated in their intense utsuka, utsaha, enthusiasm to run to Krishna, to meet Krishna. How much they neglected. They neglected their varna. How much they neglected. They neglected their ashram and all the different expressions of their ashram duties. Even they neglected their own bodies. Incredible eagerness. Now verse 6 is describing Parivesayantyas taditva payayantya shishun paya shushu shantya patin kashchid ashnantyo pasya bhojanam. In translation, some gopis were getting dressed. Some were feeding milk to their infants. They were feeding milk to their children, babies. Some were rendering personal service to their husbands. Pati seva. But they gave up all these duties and went to meet Krishna. And some gopis were taking their evening meals. So this is dressing, feeding infants, husbands. In the previous verse, we heard how the gopis gave up cooking. It says they were cooking cakes in the oven besides the milk. But cooking, as I said, is the duty of young girls, unmarried girls, generally the duty of married women or young married ladies. Ladies generally cook for the husbands and families. So they gave that up. But here it's describing that specifically they gave up ashram varna. Verse 5 is about varna dharma. Their varna, their profession. They gave up their professions as vaishyas, as milkmaids, cowherd girls, tenders of the cows, the cowherd damsels of Braj. Now, in this verse, they're giving up ashram dharma. Varna and ashram dharma. Chordye. Tyaj. Renunciation. Sarvadharman purityaja. Tyaji. Krishna's telling in Gita. So, that is significant. Now, how is this verse describing that they gave up their ashram dharma? Their ashram is that they are many of them, not all of them, but most of them are grihasthas. They're married. And as married gopis, the Brajaramanis, Radharani, Lalita Vishaka, they were all married. They gave up the duties of their being married women. It's called Patni Dharma, Pati Patni Dharma. The Dharma, the duties of the husband towards the wife towards the husband. So what are the duties? Because here we're talking about the gopis, the Nayakas, the Brajastriya that ran to Krishna. Their Nayak, their hero. What are the duties that are being described here? Also, verse 7 continues this idea. But in this verse 6, it says, firstly, they were serving their husbands, pati seva. And one other acharya has written down the different duties that they abandon. What are the duties that they abandon of their ashram? Well, one duty of a married woman, big duty, is serving the husband, serving and maintaining the children, and taking care of the house. And in the gopis' case, taking care of the house meant their profession, because the house was centered around cow protection and production of milk. The previous verse, they ran away from that, their house duties. But here it says they were getting dressed, feeding their babies, and serving their husbands. And they're eating their meals. Getting dressed, this is also one of the varna karma, the duties or the karma of a married woman. Her own bodily beauty. Serving the husband, maintaining the home, maintaining and serving the children, caring for the children, but also eating. But this also means one of the activities of a wife, that she dresses very attractively for the happiness of the husband and to enthuse him and make him eager to work very hard. Every man likes to see a beautifully dressed woman, especially his wife. So in Vedic culture, it's actually part of the Vedic culture or Indian society, that a married woman, when the husband returns from work, she is supposed to, or from the fields or wherever he may be working, she is supposed to already have bathed and dressed herself and adorned herself to look very attractive as she can look. So when the husband comes back, he feels peaceful, he feels relaxed, he feels happy to see the beautiful face and form of his wife wearing all the nice jewelry and clothing that he's given her, that he's provided for her. So they left her dressing. They left her eating. That means they didn't even care about their own bodies. Here, it's one thing to give up your varna dharma and your ashram dharma, but what about your deha dharma? There's another dharma called deha dharma, bodily maintenance. If you don't eat, you can't do much with your body. No activity, no power, no energy. What to speak of eventually dying from starvation? Deha is a type of dharma. Maintenance, preservation of the body, taking medicines to remove disease, eating balanced, proper diet to maintain health for work and for serving God, etc. So they neglected deha dharma by not eating. It says bhojanam apasya. They put their eating aside. They didn't stay near their eating. They left their food, their bhojan, half done or hardly done. So this is the extent of their eagerness and attachment to God, that they don't even care about eating. And even we see when one becomes very advanced in spiritual life, he eats very less. Nidra hara vikari vijito. It describes six Goswamis, vijito, nidra ahara. Nidra ahara. Nidra means sleeping. Ahara means eating. Eating and sleeping are very dear to all of us. Everyone loves to eat, and they love to sleep. Eating is a great source of pleasure and happiness for most everyone. And sleeping, of course, follows suit and also gives us happiness and rejuvenation. We sleep, oh, I had a good night's sleep. I feel so good. I feel so healthy and energy, full of energy now. But the great saints and advanced spiritualists, nidra hara vihara kadi vijato. It says sleeping and eating, they become vijato. They become completely victorious over them. And they sleep very less. And they eat very less. And they're very healthy. And they're very happy because they want to spend more time serving God. Sankhya Purvakanama Gana Natabi Kalava San Nikrito. They want to spend more time hearing and remembering and speaking about God, because sleeping takes time and eating takes time. So if we sleep very less and eat very less, more free time. If someone eats three times a day, like most people, then they have to spend 1 hour times three hours in eating. Average, or say minimum a half hour, hour and a half. Sleeping 6 hours, 8 hours. But the very sattvic yogis and saints and spiritualists, they sleep 3 hours, 4 hours, very less. Because of this eagerness and attachment to God and enthusiasm to serve God, their enthusiasm to serve God and associate and be with God is much greater than their enthusiasm to eat and sleep. Most people find happiness from eating and sleeping and other activities. But the spiritualist, he finds happiness, okay, he eats to maintain the body. He eats to live. They have a phrase, eat to live, don't live to eat. Most people in the world, most materialists or vishayis, they live to eat and eat and eat. I eat in the morning, noon and night, and in between time, and snacks, and at work, and a few biscuits, and a few aloo tikkis, and this and that, and a samosa here or there, and whatever, and a few sweets, and someone has a birthday in the office, and they buy a kilo of sweets, and everybody gets two or three, so I eat my two or four sweets. Although I'm not really hungry, but it's a party mood, and I might as well eat some more because I like to eat. And besides, it's my favorite sweet. So for various reasons, we eat and eat and eat. But the saints, spiritualist people, spiritual people, they find their happiness. They eat to live. I have to live to serve God and to realize God. This body is a vehicle, a means, a yantra, a machine, a vehicle, a means to realize God in the remainder of my life. So I have to eat. So I eat nice, pure, sattvic ahara, pure vegetarian food offered to Krishna. I eat what I need and not more. But I don't live to eat. I eat to live. 99% of the people in every country in the world, they live to eat. This restaurant, that restaurant, this food, that food, this stimulation, that stimulation. In the morning, the husband will wake up and then he'll tell his wife what's on his mind, what he's desiring to eat. Oh, today I want, and whatever whim is on his mind, whatever desire is on his mind, he dictates and the wife dutifully goes to the kitchen and prepares that, if she's a good cook. Says, oh, this morning I want this or that. And this, it's not that he simply gets up and she makes something and he comes and eats it. No, it's a special order. Every meal is a special order because he's living to eat and expressing his desires to eat all kinds of variety of things every day. Gopis gave up eating. They're young girls, enthusiastic, energetic. They require so much eating. They gave it up. Deha dharma, deha, sharir. Sharir Dharma, the Dharma, the rules and regulations by which we maintain and sustain this human body by proper eating and resting and exercise and drinking of water and balanced activity and thinking and behavior. So that's called Deha Dharma. And then it says that they gave up serving their husbands, rendering personal service to their husbands. That's death. Pati Patni Dharma, to give up serving the husband, Pati Seva, that means the wife is dead. That means death. This is the very meaning of marriage, the very meaning of Patni Dharma is to serve the husband. And then, since they, and feeding their children milk, that's everything. Giving up their Deha Dharma, they're getting dressed attractively and eating and eating. They gave up their Deya Dharma of attracting, dressing attractively for the husband's happiness and for their own pleasure. Ladies like to dress up attractively. And they gave up eating, which maintains their body. They gave up their husband's service. They gave up their children. That means they gave up their whole ashram dharma as grihasthas. And that's what the acharyas are saying. And more verses elaborate on that. They're ashram, married women, grihasthas, patni dharma. That's their ashram. The previous thing was their profession, their varna dharma. They gave up the cows and milking and all these things. There are some points in this verse. Actually, I mentioned one acharya has listed some of the things they gave up. And they gave up, one was boiling water on the stove to bring to her husband for his evening bath. And she, because this is one of the duties in the village, they didn't have gas bottles and natural gas connections. Water was heated on wood and gober. So this was her duty, her ashram dharma, to prepare for the husband's bath. So she was boiling water and she left it there and ran away. Forget about your bath. I don't care. And then some gopis were lying in beds with their husband. They were tired, so they retired. Early. And she was lying in bed, and when she heard Krishna's flute, she jumped out of bed and ran away from her husband. That's pretty dramatic behavior. Samutsuka. Another gopi she was dressing, and so many of them were dressing like this. It says they were getting dressed in topsy-turvy ways. And well, topsy-turvy means that, and we'll hear more about that, they fastened one ankle bell on. It says that they were getting dressed, but they weren't. Getting dressed doesn't mean they had finished dressing. The verse says that gopis were getting dressed, but they hadn't gotten dressed completely. So they had one ankle bell on one foot or one bangle. They were incompletely dressed. And then they were decorating their faces, as I said, beautifying their bodies, which is their ashram dharmas, grihastha women, putting kajal, this mascara, on the eye, and only one eye was done. They ran out. So for a woman to neglect her beauty is very rare. We'll hear more about that. And then another point, it says that their hairstyle was half done. They were brushing their hair or styling their hair in a particular way, pinning it up or whatever ladies do, making this braid or that braid. And they left it half done. And one was so excited and so much utsuka, complete enthusiasm and eagerness, that when she was called by Krishna, she was stringing a mala. She had a needle and a thread, and she was stringing some mala, some pearls, making a pearl necklace or flowers, it doesn't say. And she ran out of the house. She ran out of her house, left her husband, children, milk boiling, everything. And she still had the needle and thread in her hands. And she's running down the footpath to meet Krishna with the needle and thread and the necklace of pearls had fallen off long ago. And she's running down with the needle and thread in her hands. This shows how bewildered they were and how eager they were. So this is some of the ideas that they were saying here. And now we want to read the interpretation of one word here in text 6. Parivesh ayantyas taditva payayantya shishun. Shishun paya. This word, shishu, is very common. I think it's also a Hindi word. Shishu means child. Is it right? Sometimes you meet people, their name is Shishu Agarwal. Shishu. It's not a Hindi word? Yeah, shishu means child. Is that right? So shishun in Sanskrit also means children or child. Shishun. Paya. So paya means milk. Payo. In Sanskrit. So the translation is, one translation is that they, some of them were getting dressed, feeding milk to their infants. And my Gurudev's translation is, some of the gopis were breastfeeding their small babies, and some were engaged in distributing food to the members of their families. But they left all such engagements and immediately rushed towards the spot, Yatra Kanto, where their beloved Krishna was playing his flute. Some gopis were engaged in serving their husbands, and some were themselves engaged in eating. But neither caring to serve their husbands nor eat, they immediately left. It's my Gurudev's translation. So this word, there is some different viewpoints among commentators on this Srimad Bhagavatam shloka number 6, 29.6. One commentator says, because it says milk, so he says this was cow's milk. These were unmarried gopis, Kanya Kumaris, and they were feeding cow's milk to some children, maybe their sisters' children, or their maybe their elder brothers were married, so their sister-in-law's children. But it was not breast milk. It was not their own milk. So this particular viewpoint is held by Sri Jiva Goswami. Sri Jiva Goswami Pad is a great Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharya and commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam. He contends that this Sanskrit word, Shishun Paya, means that the gopis were feeding cow's milk to the some children or to their relatives' children, but not their own. And it wasn't breast milk or from their own stan, because he believes that the gopis that dance with Krishna, they were not married, and that Krishna is actually their one and only eternal husband, Nityapati. So there's no question of any paramour relationship or illicit relationship between Krishna and the gopis. So he says that this is, that the gopis are actually truly Krishna's wives, Swakya. It's called Swakya Bhav. Madhurya Rati, conjugal love, romantic love, Madhurya, Madhurya Rati, and Swakya. Swakya means belonging to me, my wife, my husband. Swakya Bhav, that feeling, that sentiment that this is my wife or husband, which is based on the reality of being lawfully and dutifully married to one woman or man. But Krishna's relationship with the gopis, which is generally accepted everywhere and understood, and this position is presented by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he says that, as my Gurudev also agrees, he said some gopis were breastfeeding their small babies. This is my Gurudev's translation, which incorporates the comment or commentary of Srila Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami from 500 years ago. And he says that, yes, the gopis were married. And yes, they were running away to dance with Krishna in the middle of the night in the Ras Lila, because this is Parakya Bhav. Madhura Rati, that the gopis are married to other gopas. Govardhan Mala, Abhimanyu, so many gopas are the different gopis' husbands. And Krishna's calling them and are leaving everything to meet Krishna and dance with Krishna and enjoy intimate loving dalliance throughout the night of the Ras Lila, or the many, many nights, Ratri, the many, many nights of the Ras Lila. Because this is paramour love. This is Madhura, Rati, conjugal romantic love, but Parakya Bhav. Parakya, belonging to another. These ladies, these Braja damsels, the coward damsels of Brajabhumi, were not Krishna's wives. They were wives of others. Because this flavor in love, this exaltation that parakia or adulterous love brings, although in material world, it is certainly immoral and irreligious to have a paramour, to have a wife or a husband, and to run away with another man or woman. It's irreligious, it's condemnable, and it's illicit love. It's not advocated anywhere in any religion, and certainly not in Hinduism. However, one has to admit, which we spoke in our introduction several weeks ago, that this is a reality in this world, although it's irreligious and immoral, socially immoral, that the idea of paramour love, illicit love relationship, have one wife, husband is lawfully married, but he has a quote-unquote girlfriend, lady friend, an illicit lover, a paramour lover. It's there, it exists. Everything is created by God. God is the sum total of everything. So it's illogical and unreasonable to believe that God cannot love, that God cannot have a father, that God cannot have a mother, God cannot have friends. I can have a mother and father. I can have friends. I can have servants. But God can't have any servants. He's just God. And if he's married, he's married to one wife, Ek Patni Brat of Lord Ramachandra, Maryada Purushottam. Yes, that is Bhagavan, but Bhagavan has unlimited expressions and forms because he's the source of everything. Everyone admits God is the creator. God is the source of everything. So everything means everything. Everything is an In English, everything is an absolute word. It means the sum total of all possibilities. The sum total of all possibilities means everything. Purnam, Om Purnam Adam Purnam. Purnam means complete. Complete means you have everything. If you're completely wealthy, you have all the possible wealth in the world. And no one is completely wealthy. Because if he's a billionaire, he wants to be a zillionaire. If he's a zillionaire, he wants to be whatever the next thing is. No one's really complete except God. Because he's complete within himself and he's the origin of everything, then he's also the origin of paramour love. But that doesn't mean that it's godly. That doesn't mean it's religious or divine. It's an experience. It's a flavor in love, the anticipation, the unpredictability. The excitement, will I meet or not, is reserved, all rights reserved, copyright God. All rights reserved, copyright God. This is created by him for his pleasure. Some things are created by God for our pleasure as human beings. He created animals like tigers and carnivorous animals. And he created other animals for them to eat. But for human beings, he said, yes, I've created you as human beings. I've also created your foodstuffs. These are the proper foodstuffs for you to eat. In the Bible, it said, in the Bible itself, the Holy Bible, it says, let the fruits and herbs and grains be the food for mankind. In the beginning of creation, God sent forth generations of men and animals. And he said to the mankind, you live on fruits and grains and vegetables and milk. These are the foods for you. This is the Bible. But how many Christians are vegetarians? And Hinduism, it goes without saying that vegetarianism is the basis of Vedic culture, Indian culture. Krishna, God, yes, he created chickens. Yes, he created goats. Yes, he created pigs and cows. Not for human beings to eat. Cows are to serve and honor and worship and derive milk from them, not to kill them and eat them. And the other animals have their function. Pigs are created by God to That's the sanitation department. They're the sanitation department in the villages. Sanitation department means they clean up the stool fields. That's their function. Every creation has a function. And the creator knows very well the function of his creation. You created a computer, whoever you may be, and it has a function. So you created the computer, and it's meant to function according, it's meant to operate according to the function by which you created it and put into it. A knife is created for a particular purpose, to cut vegetables or cut some object. But if you take that knife, which is created with this particular function, to kill someone, that's wrong, that's immoral, that's irreligious, that's murder, punishable. So this is the same point. So this creation is by God. So we're talking about the cow's milk and the gopis. So one acharya says this. So this concept of Parakiya Bhava that Krishnadas Kaviraj is saying, that yes, they were feeding milk to their infants. That's what Jiva Goswami says. But Krishnadas Kaviraj says they were breastfeeding their own babies, which means they were married. And these are the gopis. They stopped. That's what it says. They dropped their babies. I don't know if they dropped them. Maybe they sat them down. They're not that crazy. Some people speak like that, but we would assume that they put them down. They didn't drop them on the floor. But they stopped milking their children. As every mother knows, if their child is absorbed in drinking milk from the breast of the mother to his fill, and he's not filled up or satisfied, what will he do if you remove him from the breast? He'll cry. On your. I want more. I want more. So she runs away, leaving the child unsatisfied. She runs away, neglecting to save her husband, leaving the husband unsatisfied. She runs away half-dressed and half-decorated, leaving her self-satisfaction half-satisfied. A woman becomes satisfied and happy when she dresses beautifully and attractively. She looks in the mirror and says, oh, I look so good. Look at my eyes, look at my hair, look at my new dress. Personal satisfaction, deha dharma, shadir dharma. A man also, he looks smart. He feels, oh, I look so debonair. So they neglected all that to run to Krishna. So this is a nice point about the word payo, that this intensity of love you only find in the Braja Gopis and their Leelas, this Parakiya. How intense is their expression of love? Drop everything, leave everything, neglect everything for God. Drop everything, leave everything, neglect everything to please and serve and satisfy Krishna. Extraordinary determination, extraordinary unique detachment, and extraordinary eagerness and enthusiasm. All most desirable qualities of a spiritualist or a materialist. The verse number 6, the acharyas say, it allows both ideas, because it says paya. Paya means breast milk from a mother, a married woman's breast. Or it means, paya means milk, because it means cow, milk comes from a cow, mother cow, gomata. Gomata is also mother. There are 7 mothers in a human society. Janamata, our mother at birth. And gomata is also there, bhumimata. Veda Mata, Mother Vedas, who's nourishing us and teaching us the way of happy life, happy mental life, happy physical life, happy social life, and happy afterlife. This is Veda Mata. So here, there, it can be seen either way. Some gopis were getting dressed and feeding milk to their infants, or rendering personal service to their husbands. But they all gave up these duties and went to meet Krishna. Other gopis were taking their evening meals. So both translations of this verse we have are saying feeding their milk to their infants. But our Gurudev made it very specific. Some gopis were breastfeeding their small babies. Very personal also. Feeding milk to their infants. Is a mother feeding milk to her infant, or a mother is breastfeeding her child or offering her breast? Obviously, it's more personal this way. Some were engaged in distributing food to the members of their family. Isn't this one of the primary activities or duties of the varna? The ashram duty of a wife? Can anyone argue the point that a married woman, one of her primary duties in morning, noon, and night is to serve food to the members of the family? Do you agree? Yes. Especially in India, this is one of the great qualities, let's say, the traditional Indian woman and housewife, or even unmarried girl, serving guests, serving family, serving relatives and friends, food to their full satisfaction. In fact, we found by interviewing and inquiring from ladies, because we've gone to programs and houses, Bhajan Pravachan programs, and several ladies and housewives get together, they cook so much prasad or bhoga for Krishna. And many guests come, relatives, guests, husband and children, and some sadhus. So bhajan, sangeet, pravachan program, and the lady serves everyone. Then I'm a little bit observant. So I'm looking here and there, and I see there's no food left. There's no prasadam left. All the pots are empty. All the serving vessels are empty. And I'm thinking, how is this lady going to eat? So then I asked the housewife, I said, I can see there's no food left. You've served everyone to their full satisfaction. Everyone's happy and joyful. And now they're going home. Now it's 11 o'clock at night. But what will you eat? There's nothing. And then invariably, the Indian housewife, traditional Indian housewife, will say, Maharaj, it's a special experience that we housewives have. Factually, truthfully speaking, I'm not hungry. I don't feel hungry. I feel so full and so satisfied by serving my family, serving all the sadhus and guests and relatives, that I don't even feel hungry. I'll simply arrange, I'll clean or arrange to clean all these pots and vessels. I'll take rest and tomorrow I'll take my nasta and breakfast. Amazing. Amazing satisfaction that one can receive simply by serving food. And the gopis ran away from that. They ran away from another primary duty of Patni Dharma, of Grihastha Dharma, of serving food to the relatives, family members. Can you imagine? Just imagine. You're sitting in Delhi, New Delhi, with your wife and your mother and your father, joint family, old-fashioned style. Joint family. Your mother and father are there in the same house. And the husband, the children, maybe even your brother is there, and he's also married, large family. And this particular night, your wife is cooking, and she's serving everyone, bringing hot rotis and more sabji. And all of a sudden, she moves her head like this, drops everything. So she drop means you have a tiffin of chapatis, you drop it. Boom, it falls on the ground. Drop means to leave, to cast aside, or literally to drop. Drop is to drop, to leave or cast. And your wife runs out, and everyone's aghast, amazed, surprised. And they're all sitting at the table, practically stunned. Wah, 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 wah. Kaha, kahangaya, kaha, kahanga. Where are you going? Bye, boom. They don't even say goodbye. They don't even say hi, bye, anything. They run out, they open the door and they run. And everyone gets up, the husband gets up. What? What's going on? My wife went crazy. He's pagal. She's gone crazy and run away. So that's what they did. They went crazy for Krishna. Crazy for God. They dropped everything and ran away. Now you can understand if you actually think about, oh, they're getting dressed. Okay, they're feeding their children. They were serving. Okay, so what? Because we're rather dull when we listen. Rather dull, even more dull when we read. It doesn't really sink in or penetrate our brain what's actually happening or the intensity and severity of what's happening or what they're doing, what they sacrificed, what they gave up, what they neglected. Their name and society, their relationship with their family, their relationship with their own husbands and children. A wife to give up her children? A wife to give up her husband? Okay, husband sometimes, unfortunately. But a wife to give up her, run away from her children? No less feeding them? Breastfeeding them? Okay, it's one thing to run away. He's in the bed, he's sleeping. You go run away to a party and come back. Lock the door and go out for 2 hours and come back. Some people do that. But to breastfeeding your baby or child or shishun payun, paya, just run away? That's not amazing, extraordinary, unheard of before, inconceivable. And your wildest dreams or wildest imaginations? Can you imagine a religious, dharmically married wife in India? This is 5,000 years ago when culture was strongly intact. And there was all traditional joint families. No divorce and all these things. And they, how much they risked? They risked everything. Their Patni Dharma, their Ashram Dharma. Because of the potential for gain. What they were risking was everything. Their name, their shame, their Lajit Dharma, their Deha Dharma, their Stri Dharma, their Patni Dharma, their Ashram Dharma, their Varna Dharma. They risked it all because of the gain they would acquire by meeting Krishna, by surrendering fully to Krishna. The gain was far outweighed the risk. All to gain and nothing to lose. This is what the sadhus say. When one runs to God, all to gain and nothing to lose. They talk about this in business sometimes. Listen, nothing to lose. You won't lose anything. Just lend me 5 lakhs. Just lend me 5 lakhs. I promise you'll gain. I'll give you 10 lakhs in 1 month. Okay. So then you lend 5 lakhs and then he loses it or whatever. So nothing to lose, all to gain. That's what sometimes people say when they want to borrow money. It's only 5 lakhs. It's there. I can give it any time. I need it for 2 months. But in the material world, it's all risk and no gain. All risk and no gain. We risk our whole lives. We risk our whole energy, our whole pran and man, our minds and pran and everything we risk in the gamble, in the play of material life, pursuing sense gratification, material enjoyment. Then when we die, what do we gain? We can become animal. We don't know where we'll be in next life. So all risk, all hard work, and no gain, ultimately. Some temporary immediate shreyas, or let's say prayas, immediate gain, but not long-term gain. So gopis, they risked it all. They risked everything, and they gained everything. They gained Krishna. Ananda Kanda Bhagavan Ki Jai. Mahapuran Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.